to take a drink of water, all that stuff. And please feel free to make your video on. So if you all start looking at me like this, I can tell I should do something about that. Okay, so let me start. I have found that a lot of people really think we don't need managers and agile approaches. And that is absolutely not my experience. And I think that the reason a lot of people think that is because we see way too much control and way too little leadership on the part of management. Now, project managers are a very interesting difference here. I have found that most successful project managers are facilitators who lead teams or multiple teams, and that very few successful project managers are all about control. It does not matter what life cycle you're using. You don't have to be an agile project manager to be a facilitative project manager. And so I find that so project managers often have this perspective of, how do I support this team? How do I lead the team or teams into doing something that's useful? And how little control can I take so that they finish the work that they need to do, right? This is an interesting question and not always the perspective of enough managers. So let me talk about why management exists. The first thing is that managers always manage themselves first. And I'm calling this the think balloon, that how do our actions affect the culture of the team and the greater organization? Then managers create a harmonic whole by leading and serving others. I'm going to have a little conversation later in the chat about how your actions might affect how people feel. And then I have seen that when people act for purpose, every organization can create the innovation that they need. Now, Drucker actually says every organization exists for just one reason, innovation. And I have found that the more managers and management, regardless of your title, innovates on the management processes, the more likely you are to be able to innovate for the entire organization. So there are seven principles. I will talk about these with each of the sections. So the agenda is about managers managing themselves first, serving and leading others, and then creating an environment of innovation. So let me talk first about how great managers manage themselves. This is the satire congruence model, where you're supposed to balance yourself, the other, and the context. And this is the very high level brief explanation of congruence. If you think, oh, that person just did that thing, right? You're blaming the other person. If you say, and I see this in project managers, when other people ask them to do more than the team can do, well, there's somebody high up in the hierarchy. We really need to do this. I will push down the needs of the team and me and placate that other manager who wants more. So that's where you disregard yourself and possibly the team, and you placate the other person. Super reasonable is when you totally forget that there are other people involved. Oh, I would never do this. Yeah. I happen to be a first-class blamer. I am then very super reasonable, where I forget that there are people. Irrelevant is where we don't think of ourselves, we don't think of the other, and we don't think of the context. So when we're congruent, we balance ourselves, the other, and the context. And so if I often give this little explanation of blaming. On the weekend, I was taking a shower. My husband came into the bathroom at literally the same time that the lights went out. I did not ask, what happened. I said, what did you do? Right? That's kind of a blaming question. Like, he was going to do anything? Why would he turn off the lights in the bathroom? He would not. So I blamed him for something that was totally out of his control. And I find that a lot of our organizational policies are often include blame for for things that people cannot do by themselves. So it's kind of crazy. But if we think about how can we be congruent, how can we balance our needs, the other person's needs, and the context, we are much more likely to succeed. So there are all kinds of miniature self myths. And I'm going to talk about believing in indispensable employees or 10X people. Let me tell you about Fred. Fred worked on the engine for this legacy product. All of my experiences in software or hardware. So that's where all of my explanations are going to be. And the engine was kind of the inner loop of this product. And Fred had been with the company for 20 years. He had shepherded this legacy product and the engine part of it for that entire 20 years. If anybody had to do anything in that area, Fred was the only person who could do it. Well, Fred wanted to go on vacation. And the manager knew that there were all going to be all these ideas in the engine part when Fred wanted to go on vacation. And the manager said, you can't go on vacation. We need you, right? You're too valuable to take a vacation. You're indispensable. And that's when Fred said, how can I be indispensable? Am I the only one working on this? Well, yes. So if you think that you have indispensable people or 10X, they seem to reinforce their expertise and knowledge and until they have very narrow, very deep knowledge. Now, you can fix this if you are in the indispensable or 10X employee kind of mindset. You can say, how can we have an indispensable person work with other people? And if you never let an indispensable person work alone, that is a much better way to manage this particular problem because people need to go on vacation. Fred was not quite at retirement age, but I can see it coming in the next 5 years. We want to let people retire, right? This is a good thing. So how can we move out of the indispensable or 10X myth into a more reasonable, a more congruent way of thinking about the entire problem? So when I think about principles for managing yourself, I think about these ideas. How can you add, where do you add value? Where you add value is where the why you exist in the organization. Your purpose. I find that when I build empathy with the people who do the work, and I assume that they know what they're doing, I'm much more able to be not quite hands-off, but not so much hands-on, that I support them as opposed to be in the work. I really like to think about building a safe environment. I find that I do this best when I admit I don't know or when I need help. I want to think about how can I optimize for an overarching goal? In the case of Fred, I was optimizing for get the work done as opposed to optimizing for spread the knowledge among the team so that we have more options for when Fred wants to go on vacation. This is all also about delegating problems and outcomes, not tasks. There's more there, but I will talk about them later. So let me talk about how great managers might lead and serve others. And this is where I use these words, lead and serve, because I want to make sure it's not about control. I find that a lot of people still think that management is about controlling and directing, not leading and serving. So in the chat, I want you to think back to the best manager you had. How did you feel when you worked there? And do you remember the work or the teams? Right, the best manager, how did you feel? What do you remember? And I'm going to see what it says in the chat. Yes, this is the interactive part of the presentation. Valued and supported. Yep. Engaged. Trusted. Yeah. Empowered. Felt fun to be at work. And what do you remember about that time. Oh, I like recognized. Humble. Oh, that's interesting, Ali. Able to make mistakes. Oh, that's huge. Yeah. Because you cannot experiment unless you can make mistakes. Yeah. Speak openly. And what do you remember? Do you remember the work, the teams, or both? I really like this. Both? Both the work and the teams? Both teams. So my experience, yeah, please keep putting stuff in the chat because I always find this really interesting. I remember some of the details of the work, but I totally remember the teams. I can tell you the names of all those people now, right? And how I felt when I worked there. Now, take just one of your terrible managers, because I'm sure you've had several terrible managers. How did you feel when you worked there? And what do you remember? Do you remember any of the work? Do you remember the teams? So this is the other case, right? We had the best manager, now terrible managers. How did you feel and what do you remember? And to see what. Oh, insecure, unsure, and scared. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the same kind of thing. Felt like I had no place, stressed, overworked, undervalued, micromanaged, judged, insignificant, or unimportant. Oh, God. Okay. What do you remember? Do you remember the people, the work, or anything at all? Oh, belittle, that's really. People, okay, so you remember the people that you work with? Just the manager, oh, yeah. Yeah, working people. Yeah, culture. The work was satisfying, but the people were okay, but demotivated. So I remember one of my very terrible managers. I remember the office. I don't remember any of the work I did, but I remember going into that physical location and thinking, oh my God, I really have to do this again today. So let's clear our palates and remember that people remember how they felt when they work with managers. And as project managers, people remember how they feel when they work with you also. Let me go here. Okay. So what's interesting is, I don't know if you remember McGregor's Theory X and Theory Y. Theory X says people avoid work. They need to be controlled. They don't want responsibility. They only want money. They have no creativity except for getting around the rules. Theory Y is people want to master their work. People can manage themselves. People seek responsibility. They want to learn and accomplish work, and they are creative. I am firmly in the Theory Y camp. Do I ever have to work to support the people who have been managed by Theory X for all these years? Yes, I sometimes have to do what I call remedial management. However, I firmly believe that people can do the right job. They can master the challenges. They can take responsibility for the work and the relationships. And here's how I know. all of us on this call today somehow managed to get ourselves up, dressed, go to work. Yes, we're all in our homes. I suspect almost all of us are in our homes because of COVID. We are enter into long-term contracts of both social, possibly with family members and spouses and children and dogs and cats, and financial with mortgages. We take on all kinds of responsibility of our own free will. So that means to me that people might need support or training, but they can absolutely do all this work. And what I find is that people live up or down to your expectations of them. And that means I have to clarify the expectations I have of people, not to say, I will ask you to do this one little task. That's why delegating problems and outcomes are so, so important, rather than delegating tasks. When you delegate problems and outcomes, you explain the why behind this particular problem, and now you can trust that the people will tell you, do you need training? Do you need support? Do you need coaching? Do you need anything from me or anybody else? So I find that this assumption very helpful. So there's all kinds of leading and serving other people myths. So let me talk about keeping, let me ask you, do you want me to talk about performance reviews or keeping even marginally useful people on a team? You can put that in the chat and I will talk about whichever one you would like. If I don't see anything in the chat, I'm going to talk about marginally useful. Oh, I see one. Performance reviews. Okay. So let me talk about the first performance review I got. I got it a little bit late, and my manager said I was excelling at everything. He had nothing to suggest for me. He gave me a monstrous raise. I went back and had lunch, I think, the next day with my colleagues. I said I was really happy about my performance review. I had nothing to improve. And those of you who know me know I always have something to improve. Wait, so I was young and naive. Fine. I said I got a 15% raise. I was thrilled with that raise. And a colleague of mine, a guy, had said, I only got a 10% raise. And then he asked me, how much are you making a year? So I told him. He said, I'm still making $3,000 a year more than you are. So I went back to my boss because I was pissed. Just let it out there. I was totally pissed. And I went back to him and I said, why is this guy making more money than I am if I have nothing to improve? He said, I maxed out on your raise because we offered the women, even though you had a more relevant degree and experience in school, this is my first job out of school, we offered the women less money. I had no idea you could negotiate for your first job payment out of school. No idea. I was young and naive. So I said, I want parity now. He said, I can't do it, not until your next raise. So I said, I have to live with not parity because of the processes and procedures in the organization, even though I am more valuable than this other guy. He said, yes. I said, okay, I'm looking for another job. Please don't go. Yeah, fine. So I went to my next job. I left about 3 months later. I found a better job for much more money, right? Not surprising. And I had to wait a little over a year because my boss really didn't like performance reviews. He gave me wonderful, wonderful feedback. He said, Johanna, you don't really finish all the projects. You get them to 95%, 96%, 97%. You don't really get them over the line. I said, oh, in my most recent project? He said, well, that one and the one before and the one before and the one before. All the projects this year, I asked. He said, yes. I said, why did you wait to tell me? So notice the feedback was really useful because I still use that feedback today because I'm really not that excited about finishing. I get most of the way and I think, oh God, I really gotta finish this. So I have checklists. I use checklists for everything. I'm speaking to my people as project managers. You might have checklists for the end of a project also, if you are anything like me, or if you lead anybody like me, right? Checklists really work for people like me. So, and you might have all kinds of other people that checklists don't work for. So notice that the feedback was really important. The feedback really helped me learn how to change how I worked. But the performance review itself, I left that first company. First of all, my manager told me I had nothing to improve on, which is stupid, right? And secondly, all the structure around performance reviews don't work. Now, the worst part is we know that performance reviews don't work. We have 25 or 30 years of data that say that performance reviews don't work. And I have all these references in the book. If you really want the references outside of the book, send me an email later. I will give you the references. Performance reviews don't work. They don't create engagement. They don't actually manage performance. They manage the money. So what does work is appreciations, reinforcing feedback. When people do what you want them to do, and you acknowledge it, they will do more of that. You might also need change-focused feedback, but mostly you need reinforcing feedback. This is so different than all the management books, right? They never talk about this, but that's what we really need. We need reinforcing feedback, possibly some change-focused feedback, but we really need to know what we're doing right, and we need to know what we're doing wrong, and how to change that. Now, you might say, Johanna is pretty blunt and direct. Yes, I am. That part of me is not going to change, but when somebody said to me, if you change your words, people will hear you better, that was a light bulb moment. That was change-focused feedback, not about my personality, but about the expression of my personality. That totally changed how I work inside organizations. I bet my husband would like it to change more at home. Hasn't happened yet. So what's interesting, when managers don't lead and serve, then they're incongruent. There's a lack of respect with everybody. There's not enough empathy. But the real key is that work really feels like drudgery. All that negative stuff that we saw in the chat earlier, that's the drudgery that people really don't like. So if I think about principles for leading and serving others, let me start with building a safe environment where we teach feedback and coaching to the people we lead and serve. I did not get into software because I was so great with people skills, interpersonal skills. I have had to learn all of them as I proceed in my entire life. However, once I learned what feedback and coaching were, and I practiced it with people I trusted because I was working together with a team, that really worked. Now, the other thing is that if you can look for outcomes by optimizing for an overarching goal, right? This is where the team works for an overarching goal. I'm going to talk about flow efficiency later, but one of the reasons performance reviews don't work, especially in an agile organization, is because an agile approach, and I suspect most of you are trying to use something like an agile approach, expects that the team collaborates. When we have individual performance reviews, we are ranking other people against each other, even if it's just for the money. And ranking people is just stupid. So we have to be able to make mistakes. That's how we encourage experiments and learning and catching people succeeding. That's a really big part of this. So this is all about how people feel once you're as you lead and serve them. Now let me talk about leading for innovation. Peter Drucker said, every organization, not just businesses, needs one core competence, innovation. He said this in the 50s or the 60s or something, right? So Drucker is a pretty sharp guy. I think if he'd known me, he wouldn't have talked to so much about men. He would have talked about too much focus on tactical actions. How are people executing? That's a project management job, right? Project management takes a strategy and says, how will we execute so we can deliver on the strategy? And a lot of times managers have their fingers in the immediate low-level work. Their questions are all about the how, especially with agile transformations. I see that a lot of managers say, oh, there's a framework. We can copy the Spotify model. Spotify doesn't use a Spotify model, right? They are all about short-term actions. We need a lot more strategic thinking on the part of managers, which means we need high-level plans, larger scale and a longer time frame that answer the why, that are unique to our context. And that allows us to do long-term thinking. If I had my way, project managers or agile project managers or scrum masters or whatever facilitative project-based person title you have, that those people would say, let me balance the long-term that supports the why by short-term tactical approaches so that I can see how does this team get us to the long-term why. I think that project managers are ideally placed to do that kind of work. So there's all kinds of organizational leadership myths. And I will give you another option. Do you want 100% utilization or standardizing on how people work, especially an agile approach? You can put that in the chat. You can say either utilization or standardizing, and I will see what you say. And I will take a drink of water. I don't see any options yet. Utilization, I see one vote for utilization. How people work, okay, how people work. All right, so let me see if I can, okay. I'm going to do a little talk about standardization how about the people with utilization? Make sure you ask that in the Q&A after I'm done with the formal presentation. Let's do that. So let me talk about, I'm going to use an agile approach for this as an example. Over the past, I think about 2014 to 2017, I had run several agile project workshops for a regulated industry in the Boston area. It was a financial organization. They had plenty of regulation because financial organizations often have those. And I have a very, dare we say, pragmatic approach to an agile project. I prefer more of a Kanban, more of a flow base, possibly inside iterations, but possibly with cadences. And especially if you have a lot of interrupting work. So this particular organization really appreciated the workshops I led. I had given them five or six or seven workshops by now. They had a brand new CTO, CIO, C something level in a bank kind of an organization. Many people have a CXO or VP title. Everyone's a VP. He said to me, we did Scrum in my last organization. I said, good. He said, I want everyone to go to Scrum. I said, I'm a little worried about that because they have a lot of interrupting work. The teams are not really They don't stay the same teams. They need a lot of people from the outside. So it's kind of hard to plan for an iteration. No, Johanna, you don't understand. I did Scrum before. Scrum is perfect for us. We will go to Scrum. I want a proposal from you to go to Scrum for, 12 other teams and a transformation approach for the leadership team. And I want this in a month. So I said, I can do a lot of things in a month. I'm not sure that Scrum is really the right approach. Scrum might be perfect for your team, by the way. I'm not saying Scrum is bad. I'm saying Scrum did not work for this organization. And I have never seen Scrum work for a leadership team. Okay, just to get it out there. Scrum is fine for product or feature teams. So I said, here's I can give you a proposal, but it's not, I don't think you're going to be happy. He said, people really like your training. I would like to give you this opportunity first. Fine. So I gave him a proposal. He called me on the phone the next day, yelling at me. How could you do this to me? This is so much more expensive than it should be, right? So it looks easy, so it should be easy to deliver. Yeah. He said, I cannot believe that you disrespect me this much. All I want is for people to use Scrum. And I said, and the reason this is a proposal that's not to your liking is because I don't see how to do this. And I don't know how to help a leadership team change in just a 3-hour time frame. You're asking me for something that's very, very difficult. And you do not understand, the difficulty of it. So I also offered you two other options that would be more useful, I think, for you. I don't like those. Those aren't Scrum. So I did not get that business. The last I knew, he had gotten kicked out in 18 months because everything fell apart. So I don't want people to fall apart, but the standardizing on an agile approach, standardizing on almost anything is probably wrong. If we disregard the context for every given team and the context for the work and the context for our organizations, which always changes, right? COVID changed our context for every single organization this past year. And people will talk about going back. I'm not sure there's a back to go for, to go back to. I think we can only go forward. We need the context to help us learn how to go forward to the next place. So that's why standardization, a lot of procedures and processes, I find not very useful. So I really want to embrace the organization's messiness. And this is why I wanted to define the organization's why. I want to iterate on the strategy. I want to plan for change, not for stabilization. So let me talk a little bit about the innovation principles. This is where clarifying the purpose for you, your team, and the organization, answering the question, why does your organization exist? This is not about to be a first class anything. We will delight our customers. No, that's so bogus. Who do you serve as customers? What problems do you solve for customers? That is the why your organization exists. Now, I'm not saying it's easy to define your customers. If you're an educational institution, you have a wide variety of customers. I'm not sure how to define the why in a 1-hour meeting, right? But thinking about why the organization exists, who all the customers are, that's really a big thing. And reducing bureaucracy, when you build empathy with the people who do the work, guidelines and constraints work a lot better than bureaucracy. So I've been kind of talking around all of this. When we think about what organizations reward, I find that a lot of organizations reward resource efficiency, this picture on the bottom, instead of flow efficiency, this picture on the right. And think about it this way. If organizations reward managers on flow efficiency, how well the managers work together. So we talk about feature teams, product teams, project teams. We talk about the senior leadership team. What about all the project managers? What about all the first line managers and the middle managers and the directors and the VPs? Why are they not teams? So they can collaborate with each other and make it possible for everybody to succeed. When we apply flow efficiency thinking to managers, all kinds of managers, we change what the organization rewards. I have not yet gotten HR on board with me. I'm working on a series of blog posts and papers and articles that might do that. In my experience, a lot of HR is totally stuck on individual rewards, resource efficiency, which if you're trying to use an agile approach, does not work. So I was doing a whole bunch of reading for these books, and it turns out that the origin of many of these myths is from slavery. Slavery has the idea of divide and conquer, inventory was good, and cost accounting. And from slavery, we got factory work. And from factory work, we are trying to apply all those ideas to knowledge work, which is so idiotic. I just cannot believe it. So if you're trying to use an agile approach, part of the problem with an agile approach in many organizations is that management thinking is very, very outdated. So I would like you to think about what managers can do. You do this in your teams as project managers. You create and refine the culture. The managers across the organization create and refine the culture. Shine talks about artifacts, values, and assumptions. I turned that into how people treat each other, what people can discuss, and what the organization rewards. So when you think about this, when you think about culture, and I hope that you do, the culture of any organization is shaped by the worst behavior the leader is willing to tolerate. That comes from school culture rewired, but it's totally applicable to our organizations. So I am not looking for perfection here. Well, I suspect I have said some things to you that you say, holy cow, this woman is nuts. So I'm not asking you to change your beliefs. I'm asking you to think about the behaviors you might want to change, where you start with yourself and you think, how do my actions affect the culture? How do I make people feel with the results of my actions? And how do I help create and move towards the purpose of the organization? Think about those three things. And I hope that we can stay in touch. I hope that you decide to subscribe to The Pragmatic Manager, that you link with me on LinkedIn, and you check out the books, The Modern Management Made Easy books. I will stop the share now, and we will go to questions, especially for utilization. And if you can, if you are willing to come up to turn on your video, I can see your happy, smiling faces. Who wants me to talk about utilization, or do you have a better question right now? Well, let me talk about utilization for just a moment. So back a gazillion years ago, I was a software engineer. And my boss came to me and said, I want you to work on project A 50% of the time, project B 35% of the time, project C 15% of the time. And in my best career-limiting voice, I said, oh, and my copious free time, you want me to work on project D. He said, I would really like that. So the problem with utilization is that it reinforces resource efficiency, because when you focus on the individual, you are not looking at the throughput of the system. So if any of you are having trouble getting anything through the system in your team, think about how are people utilized? Are they all on this project? Or are they trying to spend time on other projects? Are you optimizing for the person or optimizing for the work? And think about what the organization really needs. I suspect that the organization really needs the work to get done as opposed to optimizing for the person. So what other questions do you have? Either raise your hand, come off mute. Rama, however you want to facilitate this is fine with me.
I think they will post on the chat window if they have any questions.
Okay. Let's see. I might have just shocked them. So let me ask you these questions. Where of all of the stuff I give you the quick rundown of all three books.
There's one question from
Ali. Yes.
I think
resource management does work in some instances like manufacturing. It for the machines, not for the people. Right? So this is really interesting, Ali. That people in manufacturing almost always need to work as teams, but the machines need utilization. Yes, you are correct. Michelle, I did not record this, so the slides are on speaker deck, but I did not record this.
Yeah, I'm recording it. Yeah.
Oh, you are?
Yes.
Oh, I did not realize. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So, where I can find this recording, Johan? It will be with you or where once we are done recording?
I don't know. You and I will talk about that. Since I was not recording. What is 10X? Stephen asks. So, 10X is... Do you know the idea, this is an old idea from resource efficiency thinking days, a 10x developer. So supposedly some software people were 10 times more valuable than any other developer. I worked with one of those guys early in my career. He would write stuff that none of us could figure out. So anytime, and he often did it all in a weekend, and we had no idea what he had done. It was horrible, horrible, horrible. So I find that if we think about throughput, which is, yes, the lean term, but finishing features, finishing projects, the throughput of knowledge work through the organization so we have useful products and services, 10X developers don't mean anything unless they bring everybody up with them. I'm not sure if I want to say this word, your first name, McNell. I'm not sure if I said that correctly. In consulting organizations, billable is key for them to survive. How would you balance it if you work in consulting? So I don't bill by the hour. That's how I do it. I either bill projects or I bill by value. I use a fee-based, value-based model, which means I don't have to worry about utilization. And yes, I have a book about consulting coming out. It's 90% done. It will be done this year. I'm starting my next cohort of consultants. If you want to be a consultant and you want to learn how to not bill by the hour, you should think about that book. You can buy that book on LeanPub right now. It's in progress. It's not, I'm finishing it. This will be done by the end of June when I finish with this cohort. So if you are currently a consultant and want to better your clients, get better clients, yeah. Think about joining the cohort and email me if you would like. Other questions? Agile stand-ups, are these facilitating or inhibiting creativity? Oh, God. Okay. So stand-ups that ask about serial status, reporting on tasks, those are horrible. Don't do them. Don't ask those horrible three questions. Instead, ask this question. What do we as a team need to do to move any of this work to done? Even if you just have a horrible scrum board. So this is why I don't like the scrum board. All this stuff is in progress. You can't see where in progress it is. Is it waiting for code review? Is it waiting for testing? Is it waiting for a UI person? What is it waiting for? You cannot tell. So instead, this is why I really like a Kanban board, so you can see all the states of the work and where they are in progress. And then you say to the team, what do we have to do as a team to move this work to done? Because nobody wants to go to a serial status meeting. Nobody. Nobody has ever wanted to. Nobody ever will want to. So instead of creating a serial status meeting, talk about what do we as a team have to do? And then you might have a problem-solving meeting. This is why I really prefer when people work as pairs, as a swarm or a mob, and they limit all the team's WIP, the work in progress. So if a six-person team has only two items in WIP and work in progress, they always know where the work is. They don't need a stand-up. So just as I like to have teams work where they don't need estimates, I'm not a fan of estimation in the small. I'm a fan of forecasting. However, if we don't need to do an estimate because we're always delivering something every day, and we have good forecasting because we deliver something every day, it's the same thing for a stand-up. We don't need to have a stand-up if everybody is working together. I like work done every day. I'm not fond of tasks. I like problems, not tasks. Stories, not tasks. And that's one of the reasons I like teams to work together. Other questions? You can tell I have no opinions on anything.